We're talking about morsels of truth in cupcakes made with love. Thanks for being here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Cupcakes, you know, can't solve the fix we're in these times, but they sure can't hurt. Enter the Lemon Lavender Cupcake with sage advice alongside the recipe. You deserve to rest without guilt or shame that your time was not spent productively. Taking the time for yourself is not selfish. It's basic survival. Have you been baking in the pandemic? Let's talk about it. 800-642-1234. Colton Shenicky owns Them de la Creme. It's an at-home cupcake business in Menominee, and their new book is called Spread the Love and Buttercream, Recipes and Reflections Where Love is the First Ingredient and a Sweeter World is Ours for the Baking. Colton, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so excited you're here. And you know, what's so nice is when the subtitle of a book makes me smile, you know?
And
the only thing better is if we were in a kitchen together overrun with your cupcakes. But,
I know.
I'll take what I can get. So anyway, what do cupcakes do for you?
It really is about spreading the love. Like, they're sweet for a reason because they bring sweetness everywhere you go. And really just food as a love language and as a way to bring people together. I think, especially in these times of pandemic, I think togetherness is really what we're all missing and what we're all needing. And so even if it's not in a literal sense of togetherness and it's not the physical togetherness, it's the, you know, sharing of food, you know, bringing some treats over, things like that. And that's how I've grown up. You know, my mom is what we would call the domestic goddess, you know, living that full-time work life and then coming home and making dinner for everyone and then still having enough time to make some treats for work the next day. And seeing how that would always, you know, just brighten the atmosphere at work, or if she'd make treats for me or my sister to bring to school. Like, it just brings love wherever you go.
Yeah, what did your mom teach you about life and about baking along the way?
Yeah, absolutely. My mom is great. So I remember as far back as I can, you know, baking with her, and always teaching me all the different tricks that she'd have. And we'd always, you know, have fun with it. She was one of the first people that I really had the experience of trying to do the fun, wacky flavors, and kind of go out there, past the chocolate and vanilla. One of the recipes in the book that's actually based on one that we came up with together is Rip Your Float.
I know. I was like, where are they going with this?
Right. Yeah. So that was the recipe that we actually came up with when I was in high school, I think. And there was a couple other times she would make cupcakes for the play I was in, and we'd do a fundraiser at the high school and sell cupcakes and things like that and come up with fun flavors for that. And yeah, just lots of fun baking adventures. And then, like I said, that really important lesson that, you know, there's so much love in baking for other people and, you know, sharing through food and things like that, and just seeing how it, you know, makes people happy and makes people feel a little bit more loved.
What does she think about your business, Them de la Creme?
Yeah. So she, and I swear the woman is lying. Every time I tell her something about it, she's like, "You're so much more talented than I ever was." And I'm like, "Mom, aww, stop it. That is not true." And yeah, she's always been super supportive and affirming of it. I'd show her new flavors that I'm working on, and she's like, "That sounds really good, really talented with how you do the decorating and things like that." And then when I told her I was coming out with the book, she's like, "I feel like I shouldn't be surprised by this." She like almost should have seen it coming. And she's always been so supportive and affirming, and it's just been a blessing to have such a supportive parent, both for, you know, what I do and then also just who I am as a person. Because I think as a queer and transgender person, that's not something that everyone can take for granted. And I'm super thankful for that.
Mm. we're talking with Colton Shenicky, and they own a cupcake business in Menominee. And this hour, we're talking about baking, loving ourselves, self-acceptance, and maybe not in that order. How are you spreading the love during this pandemic? How does baking make you feel? Join in at 800-642-1234. Colton, you were bullied when you were a kid. How did, what effect did that have you on through the years and now as an adult?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a both and having a bunch of different impacts on me. I think obviously, you know, as with any kid who's bullied, there's a decent amount of impact that it had in just making for a really unpleasant experience growing up. But I do think that it also made me who I am in a couple different ways. I think first and foremost, it stoked the fire in me for advocacy and wanting to make other people feel supported and get to have the experiences that I didn't, and also repeat the good experiences I did have for other people. And I think it also just really cemented throughout my life, like what unconditional love did look like out of sheer contrast. One of the profound experiences for me growing up was discovering theater, because that was one of the first places outside of family where I really learned what unconditional love looked like and unconditional support. And so naturally they were some of the first people I came out to as well. And they were absolutely affirming, absolutely supportive. And it was just wonderful. So it showed me what that unconditional love looks like. And it gave me the fire to want to make the world a better place for other people. 'Cause I think we all have a role on this earth to leave a better earth than the one we were given.
You spend a bit of time in your cookbook about body image, body mass index. What do we get wrong about body image?
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to give credit where credit is due, because that amazing section is by my contributor, Maria Colley, who is almost a dietitian pending her exam coming up. So everyone send the good luck vibes to her. She's fantastic, and I am so happy that she contributed that amazing section. But the biggest thing I think that we get wrong with body image and body mass index, and I think this overall idea of health, is that we make it such a one-dimensional concept and we have such a narrow view of what it actually is. That was one of the things I mentioned in this book is, you know, of all places, why is a cupcake cookbook talking about personal health, you know? And so one of the things that I talked about is like, okay, you know, I can see where you're coming from with that idea, but it's more complicated than that. You know, if we have physical health in the sense that we eat right, we exercise, things like that, number one, that's going to look different for everyone as far as what they need. So that already is more complicated than we give it credit for. And then also, too, that's only one facet of our well-being and our health and our wellness. If you are completely physically healthy, whatever that means, at the entire expense of your mental well-being and your emotional well-being, what good is that? And so there's got to be balance. There's got to be some time dedicated to your emotional well-being, your mental well-being, and your physical well-being. And we can't just focus on one and think that that's it.
Colton Shenicky is with us, teaching us how to show kindness to others and to ourselves through cupcakes, sprinkling messages of love and joy into baking. Do you find meaning in baking for others? Cupcake lovers, do you bake them at home or do you buy them? Where do you buy them? What are some of your favorite cupcake recipes or dilemmas? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Colton Shenicky here on the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
We're talking about baking cupcakes and living a life with love and gratitude. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You know, one of my kiddos had a friend who turned 10 recently, and for their birthday, they left rainbow cupcakes at the doorsteps of all their friends. What a lovely gesture in these socially distant times. And I thought about it when I came across the rainbow confetti cupcake recipe in the new cookbook we're talking about. It's called Spread Love and Buttercream. Author advice on the rainbow recipe, being yourself is your journey. Is baking your outlet? Who taught you to bake? How does baking make you feel? It's 800-642-1234. Colton Shenicky runs an at-home bakery business in Menominee, and he's giving us advice for life and for tasty cupcakes. Let's bring in Kathleen now in Eau Claire. Hi, Kathleen.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to point out that Colton's book is very inclusive, much like Colton themselves. I can't eat wheat, and my daughter can't eat wheat or dairy, and they have places in the book where they make suggestions for alternate ingredients. So I think that's wonderful.
Oh, Kathleen, thank you so much. Colton, what about those substitutions and workarounds?
Yeah, so I have an entire section in my book that I felt was really important to include, which has all of those different substitutions. And so there's a section on how to substitute like wheat and flour, how to substitute different dairy products, butter, eggs, sugar, all these different things. One of the things that I was talking about with baking is, especially with all those different ingredients going into it, you know, flour, sugar, dairy, eggs, et cetera, there's so many different things that you need to account for if you're trying to be mindful and considerate of people's dietary needs. And so I felt that it was incredibly important to include that section. And I actually really love how I did that section, just because as a person who doesn't really have any of those dietary needs or considerations, I felt it wasn't the best route for me to act like I'm the expert on it. And so I actually kind of took a, like, it takes a village kind of approach, and actually asked a bunch of my friends and loved ones and community members who all had those various dietary needs, to submit and include their own pro tips and different things that they do. And so it's really like a collection and compilation of different ways that each of those people handle those different dietary needs and restrictions and how they substitute and accommodate for that. And so it works really well because it's going to be different for everyone. One example is one of my friends contributed, you know, when you're doing gluten-free, a lot of the gluten-free flour has rice flour in it. Well, what happens if you're gluten-free and also allergic to rice, you know? Oh. And so there's different things in there that cast a wide net, so to say, and create a bunch of different options in each section for people to figure out what's the right route for them.
Well, how about we get into some cupcakes here? Lemon lavender cupcakes. This really piqued my attention. We have the recipe, by the way, posted on WPR.org/mornings. Can you walk us through your lemon lavender cupcakes and how this came together, this recipe?
Yeah, absolutely. So lemon lavender. So it's a lemon cupcake. And then optionally, and it says so in the recipe, if you want a little bit extra of that lemon punch, if you're really someone who's into that, you know, sour experience like I am, you can also fill it with lemon curd. And then on top is a lavender buttercream, and then you garnish with some culinary lavender flowers. Lemon and lavender is one of my favorite flavor combinations on the face of the planet. I came across it a couple years ago. I was working at an LGBT center on the campus I was getting my degree at, and we were working at a wellness fair, like just tabling, and we were trying to figure out different kinds of wellness things that we could do at the table to be interactive. And someone was talking about how lavender, both as a flower and as a herb, is very relaxing and has a lot of calming properties. But also the color lavender has a lot of queer symbolism, the lesbian symbol being the lavender rhinoceros, lavender graduation, different things like that. And so we made lavender lemonade to have at the table for people to taste test. And so since then, I'd been obsessed with that flavor combination. It's so beautiful. Like, you get the nice, like, refreshing, citrusy goodness of the lemonade or the lemon. And then you just get this beautiful, like, delicate floral afternote that just, like, caps it off, like, so beautifully. And so the minute I knew I was going to be making cupcakes, I wanted that to be a flavor combo that I would offer.
Sure.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that you can fill a cupcake with lemon curd to get that stronger flavor of lemon. How do you fill your cupcakes?
Yeah, so I use an apple corer. That's my trick. A lot of people just use like a paring knife and they just cut a hole in the middle. I just use an apple corer. It's really simple and easy. You just punch it in. It makes a little well for you and it pulls the extra cake right out. So super easy. And then you have little bits of cake to taste test. So I always recommend filling your cupcakes, at least for that selfish reason.
We're talking with Colton Shenicky, and they own an at-home bakery business in Menominee. It's called Them de la Creme. Have you found yourself baking more since the pandemic started? What have you been baking? Where do you go to find your recipes? How have your baked goods turned out? Join in 800-642-1234. Colton, let's talk toothpicks. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And in let's not insert toothpaste into our cupcakes. How about that? When you are using your toothpicks, how do you determine whether that cupcake is done and ready to pull out?
Yeah, for sure. So, for people who don't know, a toothpick is a really good tip to see if your cupcake is done so you don't have to just guess based on the color. The general consensus is if you insert a toothpick and it comes out clean, meaning it doesn't have any like liquid batter on it, that means that it's fully cooked inside and you're not going to have any raw batter. So that is how you tell that it's done. One thing I've come across recently, too, that people might be interested in if they're looking for a more ecologically friendly option is they make actual reusable cake testers that you can wash and reuse if you don't want to just keep stocked on toothpicks. Mm-hmm. But the one other trick I talk about in my book that I think is really helpful is actually slightly under baking your cupcakes. And when I say under baking, like the toothpick has some moisture on it, but it's not like actual like raw batter. So if it's just got a little bit of like moisture on it, that actually ends up having a better cupcake altogether. Just because when you have the cupcake cooling, like in its pan still, like the pan is still hot. It was just in a 350 degree oven. And so while it's still in the pan, it still bakes just a little bit longer.
Sure.
And so if you pull it out when it's like fully like 110% done, while it's still in that hot pan, it's going to bake even more just a little bit and it might even dry out. And so pulling it out at that like 99% done and letting that last percent happen while it's still in the hot pan, like keeps your cupcakes perfectly moist and not dried out.
Huh. That's kind of the same approach I take to pasta, pulling it off the burner and then waiting a minute or two.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. You know, what if you do overbake that cupcake? Do you have any tips to deal with that? Those parts?
Yeah, absolutely. So if it's like a burn on the top that you're kind of concerned about, one thing that you can do is take, if you have like a microplane, it's like a really fine zester, or even just a zester if you have one, or even just a knife, you can easily scrape off the burnt bits on the top before you frost it. So that's absolutely an option. obviously filling cupcakes, even if it doesn't re-moisturize like the whole of the cupcake, it gets a little bit of moisture back in, and also just having cupcake and filling, the average out is a bit more moisture. And then the other thing too is if it really feels like it's going to be a problematic amount of dryness, or if you're making these in advance and you want them to stay moist, another thing that you could do is making a simple syrup, which is equal parts water and sugar, heating it up till it's all dissolved, poking a bunch of holes and pouring some of the simple syrup in, and that'll keep your cupcakes moist. And you can do that with whole cakes too.
Wow, a little surgery there. We're talking with Menominee baker Colton Shanahan. The new book is called Love and Buttercream. Stay with us. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about self-love, compassion, and carrying it all forward with cupcakes here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What a pleasure to spend the hour with Wisconsin-based baker and cupcake enthusiast Colton Shanahan. Their new book is called Spread the Love and Buttercream. Here's a morsel of truth from the carrot cake cupcake recipe. There's always people out there who appreciate you and see your value, even if you don't see them. What has baking taught you about life? Is baking an outlet for these stressful times? Practically speaking, what do you want to know about how to pipe your frosting, over-baking, under-baking, and your toothpick test? It's 800-642-1234. And Colton Shanahan is with us for the hour. Colton, let's get into frosting. And when it comes to making buttercream frosting, what are some of your tips and tricks?
Yeah, so the biggest thing that I think people need to know about working with frosting and working especially with buttercream is it is not even remotely an exact science. I saw this joke one time on social media where it was talking about like cooking with garlic and how you never use an exact measurement of garlic. You just feel it with your heart. And I feel like it's the same way with buttercream. It's just very touch and go. And so I think the best thing that you can do is as you're working with it, whether it's adding your sugar to get the right consistency or if you're coloring it, just going slow bit by bit until you get the right consistency or color or what have you. And just being there for the process, and just having fun with it and playing and just seeing what happens. So
in terms of softening the butter before you start the mixing process, and I know mixing can be intuitive here, but how soft is your butter? How do you work with your butter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a couple different schools of thought there. So the softer you can get it, the better. So if you can leave it out for a good while before you're baking for it to soften to room temperature, you're going to be all the more in good shape for it. The softer it is just helps it melt together a lot better when you're making it. But one of the things that I talk about in the book too is we don't always have time for that. I know I'm a busy person a lot of the time, or I just am forgetful too, and forget to bring the butter out. So another tip that you can do is using your microwave on the defrost setting, and using that because it's a lower heat, to speed up the process a little bit. Each microwave is different. Mine's a bit of a lower wattage, so I'm more of the like about a minute and a half per stick of butter that I'm using. For a lot of other people that might be a really long time and you'd have, you know, a puddle of melted butter in your microwave by the end of it. So just playing around with it, seeing what works for your microwave and your wattage.
Keep your eye on that butter.
Yeah, the minute it starts just even melting slightly is usually the indicator for me that the rest of it is good to go. You lose just like a tiny bit of butter when you do that, but at least the rest of it is soft enough to use. So it's worth it if you need that shortcut in a pinch.
Well, if you don't mind, we need to circle back just a moment to the lemon lavender cupcakes.
Yeah.
Kim from DeForest sent an email and wants to know your recommendations for your source for lavender flowers and lavender extract and where you would find culinary lavender in a smaller quantity.
Yeah, absolutely. So I always firmly support shopping local. You'd be surprised the number of places, even certain grocery stores that have like different areas where you can get things like culinary lavender, and they're self-serve a lot of the time, so you can just get whatever quantity you need. I know here in Menominee, there's the food co-op, which is where I tend to get mine. If you need a lot and you have a bit more limited options locally, there's obviously options to purchase online as well. But even then, you can probably find small independent options with which to purchase. And a lot of those smaller independent options might even have more appropriate quantities. Obviously, I'm making these all the time, so I just got the biggest bag that I could.
Sure.
But yeah, there's a lot of different options. So,
and maybe starting with Kim's local co-op first might be a good starting place.
Yeah.
Let's bring in Mary now in Germantown. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thank you for having me on.
Sure.
I just wanted to comment on something that he touched on briefly before. When I went to cooking school, they told me that the first bite you take is with your eyes. And I thought, what better food to have to first look at than a cupcake? It brings back memories. You know it's going to be sweet and delicious. You have to decide whether to, you know, take the top off first or how to eat it. And I just wanted you to comment on the importance of the visual part of eating and how it brings back childhood memories.
Oh, Mary, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the visual component is so important. Number one, because of that point that you mentioned, which I think is said so beautifully, that you eat first with your eyes. There's a lot of good knowledge in that. Number one, if something looks good, that's all the more suggestion that it'll probably taste just as good. Another thing, too, in being intentional about that I talk about in the book is, you know, how do you garnish things? And one of the things that I talk about is, you know, generally a good idea is if you're garnishing that you want your garnish to be indicative of what the flavor actually is so that people can take that as a visual cue to know what the flavor is, especially if there's like a wide variety of different cupcakes available. So, you know, is it a chocolate cupcake, maybe garnished with some chocolate shavings on top? Is it, you know, carrot cake, maybe do some of those cute little, like frosting carrots that people do, different things like that. So it serves as that visual cue, for people to be able to determine what the cupcake is. And then the last reason I think that that's really important is because cupcakes, not only are they, you know, delicious and a way to spread love and share happiness with people, but they're also a means of self-expression. So the way you decorate your cupcake and make it look can also be an expression of who you are as well. One of the more controversial things I did in the book is actually, with rare exception, I didn't include any pictures of my own cupcakes in the book. With the reasoning that I didn't want people to have the expectation that this is exactly what your cupcake should look like when you're done. I want this to be your process that you can have fun with and that you can enjoy and decide what you making this cupcake is going to look like. Obviously, there were a few exceptions, like, for example, my buttercream flowers. Obviously, that's a visual guide for decorating, so I should probably show some examples to be helpful. But otherwise, on a lot of the recipes, there aren't actually pictures of them. There's stock photos that I had licenses for that are more like mood setters than anything, not as much like an example for what you should be going for. And I said the same thing for the lessons about self-love and compassion in the book as well. You know, you shouldn't have a set idea of here's what you should be going for with that either, because it's your process, it's your journey. Have fun with it and make it what it needs to be for you.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with cupcake expert Colton Shenicky, and they're sharing their love of baking, recipes for finding happiness and love on this journey. Have you been reflecting on love throughout the COVID crisis? And do you think about our times, these times as you bake? What's helped you? What's your journey been like to self-love and self-acceptance? 800-642-1234. Colton, let's get into the piping business here and how you do it. Can you just start with some of your tips for how you pipe your frosting?
Yeah, I think piping bags and tips are an actual godsend. I think even the most like green of bakers, I think it really just takes the presentation up a notch to use a piping bag instead of just spreading it on. It's such a magical world to look at all the different tips that you can get for piping and the different types of accessories and things like that. And so the place that I learned and where I think would be good for a lot of other people is the internet, being the wonderful resource it is, and the magic of YouTube tutorials, which is where I learned a lot of them. But yeah, I think just taking the time to play and practice and see what different tips make different shapes and different effects, having fun, experimenting, playing around. You never know what kinds of things you can learn or what kind of tricks you can make for yourself that the world hasn't seen before.
Is there a particular go-to piping tip that you always use, or one that we should start with in our kitchen?
Yeah, my favorite is the open star tip. It's the classic kind where it's got like all the points on it. That's the best way I can describe it. It just gives that classic like ridged, like ribbony look that you see on most traditional cupcakes. So it's a classic tried and true that I think is a good staple to have in anyone's kitchen. And also too, I think the bigger open star tip that you have, the better, just because you can get more bang for your buck, and then you have to use less frosting per cupcake, and then that's all the more frosting you can have just to enjoy by yourself as a guilty pleasure when you're done.
So when you're decorating that cupcake, do you ever start from scratch or start over if you don't like how the frosting is coming out?
It depends. I think if right from the get-go it's just clear that this isn't happening, then I probably will start from scratch. But the magical thing with piping and decorating is you will surprise yourself with the number of mistakes that you can cover up by getting creative. So if it happens halfway through, there's usually a way to save it, or clever placement of a garnish or things like that.
Author Colton Shenicky, the book is called Spread the Love and Buttercream. It's 17 cupcake recipes with life lessons, page after page. Have you witnessed acts of kindness in this pandemic? Have you been the recipient of cupcakes? How have you been reflecting on love? What's helped you? What does baking mean in these times? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute with Colton Shenicky here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with author Colton Shenicky. We're getting baking tips and tricks and words to live by. Here's orange creamsicle cupcake advice. Don't deny yourself the tangible rewards of your hard work. You deserve them, and you should be proud. The cookbook is called Spread the Love and Buttercream, and Colton Shenicky is with us for 10 more minutes. Colton, there's another recipe that is the tiramisu cupcake, which gave you a bit of fits and starts. What was difficult about creating this recipe?
Yeah, absolutely. So with creating recipes that I've had throughout the book and flavors that I've made throughout my journey, there's definitely been flavors that have come out of, you know, here's a flavor that I really like. And so I'm just going to figure out how that translates to cupcakes. But then there's also certain techniques that I want to try. And so then I figure out a cupcake flavor that works for that. And tiramisu was a little bit of both. I was trying to figure out different like classical desserts to try and base new cupcake flavors off of. And this came to mind. Number one, my fiance absolutely is obsessed with coffee. and so I thought that would be a fun one to try. And the other thing too that I wanted to try was having two cupcake flavors in one. Because when you think of tiramisu, not only do you think of like the rich coffee flavor, but you also think of those distinct clear layers, like there's the ladyfingers and all the different things going on. And so I wanted this cupcake to be two distinct flavors layered throughout, so that when you bite or cut into the cupcake, you actually see the distinct layers like you would with a tiramisu. And so my editor on the book, Zen, who also has been one of my great masterminds helping me figure out different flavors and ideas and brainstorming, I was talking to them one day and I'm like, okay, I want to do this. I want to have a tiramisu cupcake, all these different layers. Like, how do we do this? And just brainstorming ideas back and forth with them. Because the idea was, for people who haven't looked at the recipe already on the website, it's vanilla cake and chocolate espresso cake, and it's in those alternating layers. And so I was talking to Zen. I'm like, okay, do I, you know, put in a layer, bake it a little bit so it sets up some, put another layer, bake some more, dot, dot, dot. Do I, like, put a layer in, freeze it, put another layer in, freeze it, and then bake it all at once? Like, how do I get these clean, crisp layers?
Yeah.
Right. Instead of like a swirl or something like a marble cake would have. And actually both of those trials and errors were more emphasis on the error and didn't work out as much. So what we ended up doing was just piping in layer by layer. You just get those two flavors each in their own separate piping bag and just pipe one layer, pipe the next, and just alternate until you have your full cupcake paper and bake it. You don't get the perfectly clean layers like I had originally envisioned of just those perfect like horizontal stripes. There's a little bit of a wave to it. But I also thought, you know, ladyfingers are round. They're not like cubes or rectangles. So they're going to have curves to them too in those layers. So it works out perfectly. And I think the biggest power we can have for ourselves and our own happiness is the ability to say this is good enough. And so that's what I did. I said, okay, you know, I got the layers I wanted. They're not perfectly straight, but neither am I. So it's fine. And it's a delicious cupcake. So that's all that matters, right?
Okay, so you call for strong brewed coffee in this recipe. Tell us how you brew your coffee for this recipe, please.
would it be like pulling the curtain back on the Wizard of Oz if I just told you that my fiance did it? Because he's the coffee nerd in the house.
Oh, dear. Okay, this recipe is going south. No.
Yeah, no. It's another one of those things where it's individual preference, and that's why I kind of keep it vague in there. It's each person's individual preference, what brand of coffee, what kind of coffee, how they want to brew it, stuff like that. And so, especially since my fiance is usually the one eating more of them in the house, I usually have him make the coffee how he wants it. and then just go to town with it.
That's fair. That's fair.
But you just feel it with your heart again, like buttercream and garlic.
Okay, so here's something less controversial. mascarpone cheese, not cream cheese. Why go that route?
Well, in the book, I do say if you do need cream cheese in a pinch, that'll work just because mascarpone can be so hard to find. But it's just one of those things where it's like that's the classic that you go with for a tiramisu. So if you really want that full tiramisu experience and you're willing to spring a little and try and find that, totally by all means go for it. Tiramisu is the last recipe in the book, so it's kind of the like if you want to like go hard or go home with this recipe. So if you really want to flex, like you can flex with this recipe. I mean, the recommended garnish for it is a little bit of edible gold leaf for crying out loud. So it's really like there's a bunch of different ways that you can kind of show off those baking muscles, if you will. But just like I said in the book, if it's hard to find or if that's out of your price range or you're not as familiar or as comfortable working with that, cream cheese also totally works in a pinch. So no shame or judgment there.
Well, should we end with a bit of practical gratitude that you also pay homage to dishwashers in your cookbook?
Yes.
I was like, amen, the dishwasher.
Yeah. So the book is in three parts. So the first part is talking about self-love and our relationship with ourselves, because that's important and we deserve that. Then part two is our relationships with others, both intimate partners, but then also friends, family, etc. And then part three gets into more social justice kind of concepts, because that's, you know, our relationship with the world, in a sense. And so one of the chapters I have is called, or I can't remember the exact title, I'm the worst author on the face of the planet, but it talks about privilege, and the way it frames it is, you know, not everyone has a dishwasher, and it talks about this idea of we all have different things in our kitchens that make for easier or harder experiences in our baking. I am one of those people who doesn't have a dishwasher. I never have. I'm so excited for the day when that comes. But in the meantime, I don't have one. And so that, as one facet of my baking experience, makes things a little harder because I have to wash everything by hand. And so it just talks about that privilege kind of example of, you know, recognizing and being mindful of the fact that both in our kitchens, but also in our lives, people are all coming to the conversation with different things, and those things may make life a lot easier for them, or it could also make life a lot harder. And it's important to be cognizant of that and also figure out the ways that we can try and bridge those gaps.
Colton, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to be here.
Colton Shenicky owns Femme de la Creme in Menominee. The new book is called Spread Love and Buttercream. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.